people think a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. And when he gets home, he wants to dial to a sound and a station that'll make him smile. 660 will make you forget how tired you are and how deep in debt. So when you tune KFAR, just relax and listen wherever you are.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is March 15th, 1985. I'm Gail Malloy. Each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we meet a pioneer. We'll spend the next hour with Dr. Roland Lombard, Honorary Fairbankson from Wayland, Massachusetts. The doctor is best known for his 57-year-long dog-mushing career, winning every major title in North America. This morning's presentation is sponsored by the Forget-Me-Not, the Riverboat Discovery, Sophie Station, Two Rivers Lodge, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Larson's Jewelers, Interior Signs, and Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank. And now, Paul Rosenthal on the violin, Doris Stevenson on the piano, Alaska's Flag Song. Welcome to the KFAR studios, Dr. Lombard.
Thank you.
Does that music stir you?
Yes, that's pretty. It's real nice.
How long have you been coming up to Alaska?
Since
1958. Well, we're going to start at the beginning. You were born on September 17th, 1911. Where were you born?
In Raymond, Maine.
And a big family? Little family?
I have three sisters.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I suppose they took to me, my family.
Were they all older than you? Oh, you were the oldest.
Yes.
I had three younger sisters. Were you close?
Yes, very much.
What was boyhood like in Maine?
Well, we all had to work to a certain extent, and I guess that's why I was able to earn money to go to veterinary college, and that with some money that I got by winning a very large race down there.
You won a race that put you through college?
Well, $2,000 around 1930, that's a lot of money.
Gee whiz. And that paid for your education, then?
Well, I had to work all to get by, you know. I mean, it didn't just do it.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the family, my dad, he had to work very hard, and he couldn't give me any help and so that when I went to college, I had to use just that money that I could.
What was the race that you won that got you
Laconia.
That money? Laconia.
And that was way back in 1930.
Uh-huh. And started the tough years there, huh?
Yeah.
What school did you go to, veterinary school?
The one in Canada.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, when did you start mushing dogs then? How old were you? And how did you happen to get interested in that?
Oh, I was probably about 15 or 16 when I started to race dogs. But in those days, most of the teams were two- and three-dog teams. And they went over some fairly long races. And so later on, Seppler came down and...
Leonard Seppler?
Yes.
Came to Maine? Went
yes.
to Maine?
Uh-huh. Yes, that was after the big run to Nome with the diphtheria.
Will you tell us a little bit about that, especially for those of us who are not really familiar with that? Give us some history on Leonard Seppler and that famous run.
Yes, well, he missed he started out to do the whole thing, to come here to Fairbanks and pick it up and then take it back. But the epidemic was so bad that they had to do it quicker. So they made the run, they had probably about 15 people that were taking it.
That were mushing?
Yes.
And that's from here to Nome?
Yeah.
And the worst of the epidemic was in that area then?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And so he missed his lap, and he went through two or three and kept right on going. And so he always had a large team, and he was...
What year was that?
1923, I think.
Uh-huh.
I'm not exact, but I think that was then.
So as a boy, he was a hero to you?
Yes, that was one of the things that got me started.
Well, what was it like when you met him? What were the circumstances? How did you happen to run into him?
Well, after that, he came down for speaking and so forth, and they went to Poland Springs, which is just about 12 miles over the hill from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to know him there. It was a big summer place, and the big hotels that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And they went in with him, and he stayed there for quite a long time. And I was too young to take the car or anything like that, so I'd take one dog that I had that I went 10 miles, no, 12 miles, I guess it was, across to there and hung around the place there. and then I'd come back, you know, and so...
Boy, that must have been a thrill for you then. Here's your hero.
Yeah.
Well, you'd been interested, though, I guess, in animals. Is a lifelong interest for you?
Yes, yes. I have... with cows and horses and all.
Did you know when you were very young that you wanted to be a veterinarian?
No. No, as a matter of fact, when I got through school, high school, I decided that I saw a lot of people that were being put through for their families and that couldn't really afford it, and they would go and not use the education that they were using. So I stayed out for one year, and then there was two or three things that I thought that I would like to have, and then finally it come down to being a veterinarian.
Huh.
And so, of course, that was kind of hard because you couldn't get any jobs during school because the people that living in that area that was going there they wouldn't take outsiders quite, you know.
Oh, in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to take a short break here to acknowledge a couple of sponsors, the Forget-Me-Not and Two Rivers Lodge.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality, the same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked-about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16-mile Chena Hot Springs Road.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linen, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square. It's 18 minutes past 9 o'clock, and welcome back to Meet a Pioneer with my guest in the studio, Dr. Roland Lombard. Well, you're going to school in Canada, and it was kind of tough. You won $2,000 to help pay for things, but that didn't make it easy, did it?
No. That I had to, Dad couldn't help me at all, even if I had to drop out of school.
Uh-huh.
He just was able to take care of the family.
Now, you had dogs during your college years?
No, I had to let those go, and all except one that I kept.
Is that because you couldn't bear to let them all go?
No, that was a little mongrel dog about the size of a cocker spaniel. I ran him on lead just the same, and
is that right?
It, yeah.
Huh. So did you have a particular breed of dog you used in those early years, or was it just like this little one, a kind of a mixture?
Well, after a while, Seppler allowed me to take two dogs, two Siberians, and then...
out of his group, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Well, they had 100 or... 100 and a quarter, I guess, perhaps.
Were they a gift, or did you buy the dogs from his kennel?
Well, no, he just loaned them to me.
Oh, I see.
And there was some problems with them, but we got that out, straightened out and all.
Uh-huh.
And the race was over and everything, he said, they're mine. And He gave me another one. There was three. He came up to Alaska to pick up Siberians, and they, out of nine, I got three after a while. They were not, I mean, easy ones to keep, you know.
Their temperament?
They didn't want to work and so forth, but I never had any problem with it. And they were fighters, and my little mongrel that I had, I took them in the kitchen where with that dog, and those dogs just kind of bristled up and started over to go over to get him, and he will take a large dog and knock him down, but of course they'd get up and probably kill him, you know. But there was no biting or anything like that. I don't know how he does that. And I took that one out, and I did the same thing with the other three, the other two, and they were the most they didn't know what to take, and they never fought.
Really?
Never fought.
What a strong-hearted little dog it was, huh?
Oh yeah, he was. Name was Bucky.
Gee whiz. A kind of a special love for some of your dogs, huh?
Yes.
There's some that stand out more than others.
Yeah, that was the one that I did keep, of course. And then when I was in my veterinary office, he came with me, and I went into Massachusetts rather than up. I wanted more dog work.
So did you know anybody in Whalen or have any family ties? Is it just a place you picked to go and open a business?
Well, I looked around for quite a little while,
uh-huh.
And I worked for a man for about a year and a half, and then I picked out a place, and fortunately they were, I didn't have any money, you know, but somehow they just thought maybe I would be sure to pay them back.
you had a trusting looking face. They could trust you. What year did you start your business?
1938, I think.
1938 in Whalen, Massachusetts. What was practice like early those days of veterinary medicine?
Well, we did large animals also, but we had a large group after a while. I had four other veterinarians working under me, and so it got a little bit big.
And it was your practice and these others were working for you?
Yes, yeah.
Gee whiz, you must have been one of the largest in the area.
Yeah, I think so, except for the ones that I don't know exactly what to say, but it was they take them in for to take care of and so forth.
So when you got into this business and business was doing very well and money was coming in, did you really get into dog mushing again? And
after a while,
races.
I did, yes.
Uh-huh. When did your career start where you started winning so many titles? I know it all started back east, but at what point was it, did you really start to rack up the winnings?
Well, probably somewhere in the late 40s.
What were some of the races you entered?
Oh, golly. I mean, they were just in New England. We didn't go out. I guess there wasn't hardly any races across the lower.
Huh. It wasn't big everywhere, but it was certainly big in New England area.
Yes. Yeah.
How were the sleds? What kind of sleds did you have then? And what was an average team, size of a team?
Well, about seven
mm-hmm.
by that time. And the sleds were very much like the same way. You know, we've done a little bit better on them, but and the dogs and harnesses were not quite as good as they are now, but they were quite.
What were they made of?
There were some leather ones, but mostly it's a webbing.
Uh huh. And were the sleds the short ones that they have that you see now in the races? Were they similar to that even then?
Very much.
Uh huh.
Very much.
Had you ever done any sort of racing other than? Or any sort of dog mushing other than racing? Was it utilitarian at all?
No.
Uh-huh.
No. Well, yes, in a way. When I was, I had to go about 13 miles to high school, and I had a car. And we, some other people that were going that way, why we'd fill up the car and take them. And then when the snow was good, and of course they weren't plowing the way they used to now, and I would go down and with the dog team and. They had a lot of people were coming with horses and sleighs,
mm-hmm.
and so I just chained them up in the stalls, and then
at
come
the school
home
yard
way.
At the school.
Yeah.
Gee, just
yeah.
Huh? And the dogs would just wait for you while you were attending school during the day.
Right.
Huh. Well, at what point did you think about mushing in Alaska?
Well, a number of people asked me to come up and so forth, and so it used to be that anyone up here, and I guess probably down below. That when they get to be 40, they would stop racing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming up to about 45. And I said to myself, well, if I'm going to go, I'm over the age anyway. And so I came up. I came up the first four times by air, and we had it. Then I'd have to get a truck to haul them around with, and all that sort of thing. And
you flew the dogs up,
yeah.
And then got a truck. Did you know anybody up here really when you first came up? What was it, 1956?
I didn't really know, but. You know, they'd been writing to me and things like that, and so I thought, well, gee, I guess I'll go. So.
Huh. Well, by this time, I understand that you had started developing some ideas and methods of making a better racing dog. What were some of the things that you had been working on?
Well, the feeding and the watering and all the things that way back dogs can if it isn't icy and there's plenty of good snow, they can exist without having drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get as much as they'd ought to get. And so that we... a lot of things like that. And when I came up, all of the dogs were trucked in the back of a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, without any straw or anything, you know, and just a lot of things that we were doing down below.
Now down below, though, you were using the straw and making more water available. You were doing that, but when you came here, you said you didn't notice those things being done?
No, the way that they were just taken out open in the...
Well, how'd you feel about that? Did that bother you? Did it make you worry about those dogs, or what?
Well, they existed very, very well, as far as that's concerned, but things have changed, and that's the...
Well, was it the North American Classic that you entered the first time, about 56? Was that the race?
58.
58.
Yeah.
And you won it. Is that right?
No. I think I was fourth first time.
Uh-huh.
And when I came up, the first thing when I hooked up my dogs, I went out and I got lost.
On the trail?
Yeah. And then... I broke my sled on that same run. The dogs got away and took off. So Owl Lake was the one that told me where to go and everything, and so he came and got me back. And then... I hadn't been over the race trail, and Earl. Offered to take me around on a big sled and show me the way to go. And so it was a little icy, and it was just bumpy, you know. They didn't have any skidoos to work with or anything. It was just snowshoeing and the dogs packing it down.
Uh-huh.
So I asked him how, because I was in the sled, and that was bumping and bumping and bumping, and I said to him, how much of this trail can you run them wide open? Oh, he says, we got to run them wide open. So I got quite a riot.
Boy, I bet. And you stayed inside. You didn't get thrown out of the bucket.
No.
Gee, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Roland Lombard on Meet a Pioneer.
After a long, hectic day with noise and confusion, it sure is a joy to come home to peace and quiet. I look forward to coming home, sinking my feet into soft carpet, enjoying a peaceful dinner in my nicely lit dining area with its soft decor. Where some apartments make you feel so cramped and closed in, here at Sophie Plaza, the design and layout are open and spacious. Living here is really comfortable. The double sound barriers in the walls between the apartments make it so I never hear my neighbors. When people ask why I choose Sophie Plaza, I tell them, quiet, relaxed, plush, and affordable. That's why I live here. Sophie Plaza, it's not just another place to live. It's a lifestyle.
Larson's Jewelers here in Fairbanks brings you this interlude of music to think about gold and diamonds. To picture the fire of a fine opal, or the intense color of sapphires, rubies, emeralds, or Alaskan jade amid nuggets of gold. To think about a gift for you or someone important in your life. And also to think about us, Larson's Jewelers at the corner of 4th and Noble here in Fairbanks. A very special independent jeweler featuring nugget jewelry, custom design and repair, personalized and engraved for you. Visit us, Larson's Jewelers.
Meet a Pioneer. KFAR Radio is proud of this show, and we're proud of our sponsors. Take it from Ag Baba, folks. One of the greatest pleasure trips you'll ever take is a trip up the Chena and Tanana Rivers aboard the riverboat Discovery. It's scenic, it's fun, it's a little adventure back into Alaska's past, a real riverboating adventure, guided and informed by lifetime Pioneer Alaskans, the Binkley family. The Binkleys, three generations of riverboat captains on Alaskan waters whose knowledge and love of Alaska is unsurpassed. Try the Riverboat Discovery, and when your trip is complete, you'll feel like we do here at KFAR. It's a joy to speak of the Riverboat Discovery, and it's a pleasure to do business with the Binkleys.
Thank you very much. We appreciate our sponsor's support. Sophie Station, Larson's Jewelers, the Riverboat Discovery. Back with Roland Lombard on Meet a Pioneer. You've been called, I've heard you referred to as the Babe Ruth of Alaskan dog mushing. When did you win your first Alaskan title?
That was in 1958. 59. I almost won the first time. But I did win on the second try.
Was that exciting? I mean, do you get a thrill when you win?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
When you came back that second, actually, when you left the first year, you hadn't won, but you did pretty well. Were you excited and anxious to come back? Did you know you'd come back?
Oh, yes.
What was special? What made you know that you were going to travel, 5,000 miles?
It kind of, the whole thing is the trails were better and longer and more chance of butt heads with the rest of the good ones, you know.
Uh-huh. So that was kind of exciting, racing against some big names, huh?
Yeah.
Who were some of those that you were racing with in those days?
Oh, golly, so many that.
Now, how about this? I found this 1958. Remember and recognize some of those?
Oh.
That's you,
yeah.
In 1958.
Yeah.
You got to know some of those guys pretty well.
Oh, sure, Atler. We had a back and forth and back and forth, you know, there. That.
Uh-huh.
Bergman Sam was great. And Doc Harris. Gareth Wright. Wilbur Sampson. Oh, I tell you.
Is it true that Gareth Wright ran Cocker Spaniels once?
He might have. I wouldn't take it away from him. But on the other hand, he's always having very, very good dog teams. Very good dog teams.
What dogs were you mushing here in Fairbanks in those first years?
Siberians entirely.
All Siberians, huh?
No.
And was that from Sepala?
No, we had we had been breeding these dogs
in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
That's important. What were you doing special about breeding these dogs? What were you looking for, and what were you doing to make them a better racing dog?
Well, I don't know that I've... There were some very, very good ones. So I don't think that at that point I could say that I had... You know, I was just getting some of the better ones.
Uh-huh. Now, at some point, you switched to Alaska.
Yes.
Now, what prompted that?
There were more of them, and...
easier to get?
There was more of the Alaskan dogs.
Uh-huh.
And so it... you could hardly... breed them and so forth. It takes a lot of dogs to get a good one. I mean, you might get a whole bunch in a litter, but it you have to have a lot of dogs and to get
what makes
the good ones.
That good dog special?
It's hard to say. You know, they have to be very courageous and just wanting to run, and you can't make them go because they just won't. They want to do it themselves. I mean, it's bred into them.
Did you feel at any time in your career, do you feel that you have some mental communication with your dogs? Do you feel like you get to know each other?
Yes, I do. And when you're coming up to a tough turn, one that the dogs don't know, if you aren't thinking of that, the dogs may go anywhere. And it actually, I mean, it's funny, but you've got to just think
and concentrate on that, and
yeah.
Somehow the dogs, your dogs, will pick that up.
I think that some of them do.
Well, what did you? How did you develop this with them? Can everybody do that?
Oh yes, I mean.
Did you work with them especially? Do you spend a lot of time with them during the day and? Are you their only feeder and that sort of thing?
Well, I try to most of the year. You see, back then I had to have someone to, because I was working.
Uh-huh.
And but the people that we had to do it were, you know, very special people too. You know, they liked the dogs, and it wasn't just a job. And
does that make a difference?
Oh yes, yeah. I've had people that come in and worked and so forth, and the dogs, some of the dogs just don't like them, and I don't know why.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're not mean to them or anything, but...
In your career, have you raced mostly short races?
Yes.
All short races? Or?
Yeah, I haven't gone to any of the longer ones, no.
For any particular reason? Or?
Oh, there's a couple.
Uh-huh.
Number one, by the time that I... That they started these longer races. I was too old a little bit, you know, to stay out there in that cold, and I have great trouble with my hands. I've got some arthritis, and I have to be very careful with my hands. They'd freeze when somebody else could go out with just a pair of gloves.
Mm-hmm. Had these longer races started when you were much younger, would you have participated?
I don't know. Of course, over my time, this seems like the better one for dogs and the drivers.
Physically?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're getting in some places not long enough trails to do it, mostly because there isn't the room that we have up here.
Uh-huh. Right, I can imagine there's not many places outside where you could have a 1,000-mile race and be out in the wilderness.
Or even a 25-mile race is not, it's kind of hard to get that much, you know.
Uh-huh. You favor the three heat, is that what you call them, three heat races?
Yes. Uh-huh. I think that tells whether they're really good dogs or not. But you can't run the dogs every weekend.
Uh-huh.
Three days going, and they'll get stale, and they'll be tired, you have to give them either a shot race on the next weekend or something like that, or you have to skip a weekend.
Uh-huh. Are you still in practicing veterinary medicine?
No. I sold my practice, and then I worked for up to about 3-4 years ago. I worked with some other people, and so I've got all I can do to take care of my dogs.
How many do you have at home?
Oh, altogether we have about 40.
Uh-huh. There are none up here right now this year, is that correct? You're not entering any races?
No. I race down in the lower part. Uh-huh. You know.
Oh, you've just been in some races recently?
Yeah, even last week.
Is that right?
Yeah.
See, how'd you do?
I was third.
Uh-huh.
But there weren't too many big teams, you know, there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I didn't come up to race this year was that I only had 11 dogs that I could race with, and the rest of them are younger and aren't experienced. So we're hoping to be back up here with a dog truck and full of dogs.
So you're going to do this again? You're going to be racing next year?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Is it?
Well, you know, something has to stop after a while, but on the other hand, I'm not going to let it go.
Well, I hope not. Does it get you frustrated to watch others going to be racing this weekend and you're not there?
Well,
or
yes.
Or not participating in the race?
Well, no. I mean, I had a good reason for it. You know, if I just said, well, I don't think I'll go, it's a matter of I just don't want to be the tail wagger, you know, in those. If I can be up in the middle of the pack, I'm not happy about it exactly, but because I'd like to win. But on the other hand, I have to know that some of the bigger kennels and some younger guys that are pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if I can get in there where I am, if I start getting back way back, then I'll know that I'd better quit.
That spirit of competition is keen, isn't it?
Yeah.
It stays that way. The dogs feel it and you feel it. I understand in one of the articles I read that you felt that it was your responsibility to get excited and do that for the dogs as a coach and a leader.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how do you do that? What do you do that shows your dogs you're excited? Do you do anything special, or do you run around and you talk to them, or what?
Well, you know, a lot of different... Well, you know, a lot of different little things, but when it's cold and blustery and they've been working pretty hard before, I have some dogs that if I go around the truck and clap my hands and they'll be pushing at each other and jumping and all that sort of thing, you know, just kind of get them, you know, into the wanting to go.
Uh-huh.
And so...
You have a close relationship with him, huh?
Yeah.
Just the machine. Have you ever had any dangerous or frightening experience, anything awful ever kind of bad happen to you on the trails?
Not in on the race trail, but... I think probably I come as near as can be after the race here in Fairbanks. We used to go across the Tananar to get some running on the... in the flats,
mm-hmm.
and we had some good trails there. So after the race was over and a day or two, I had bought one or two dogs, and I wanted to put them on a team before I went back home, because we don't have any snow there during, you know, by the time I get home. And there was one little dog that was... a little female that I bought, and I put her on alone, and I was going across the river, and there was a great deal of snow, so that you didn't see the water until you was right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what the leader would do, whether she would come around for me or not, and because the first time I was out with her, and it was probably about 50 feet across, and opened up, and it was just boiling, and I was right on the, you know, right on the thing, you know, uh-huh. because the snow over there, so that you didn't see it until you was right there. And by golly, I called her to come around, and she did.
Oh.
And I didn't step off my runners or anything. I was afraid that I didn't have anything underneath me, you know. And when they got all the way around there, I just let them go, you know, got turned the sled and come back. And I tell you, that was probably as close as I've been.
I bet you were proud of her and shaking in your
yes,
boots at the same time.
Yes, and it was a bad thing that we took her home, and she had a cough, and I did everything that I could tell, you know, to find out what was going on, and I took her into a large veterinary hospital that they had better facilities than what I had even,
mm-hmm.
and so she had tuberculosis. And they said that there's no way that they knew that they could take care of that. And so we had to put her down.
Is that hard to do?
Well, I let them do that at that time. Mm-hmm. But with my own dogs, most of them, if they're happy after we stop going to races with them. A lot of them go up to 14, 15, 16 years.
Gee.
And I don't let anyone put them down. When they're really ill, then I'll do it.
But there's nothing wrong with living to a ripe old age for the dog,
no,
huh?
No, we try to make them happy.
Uh-huh. We'll be back in just a moment.
Yeah.
Dr. Carol Davis wishes to take this opportunity to inform her patients and all her new friends from Meet a Pioneer that the offices of Denali Chiropractic Clinic have moved from their former location at 3525 College Road. You're invited to visit Dr. Davis's new offices at 1018 College Road on the east edge of Kramer's Field. Or you may call Dr. Carol Davis at 456-5252. That's Denali Chiropractic Clinic, now located at 1018 College Road. Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by Interior Signs, long established as one of the interior's most professional, most dependable year-round sign makers. They're licensed, insured, and always ready to serve Fairbanks with signs of every kind. Signs for business, contracting, or creative design. So for signs that stand the test of time, call Interior Signs at 479-3859. That's 479-3859. Interior Signs at 2405 South Cushman.
20 years ago, Mount McKinley Bank was founded by a group of forward-looking individuals who saw a need in the community. The new bank offered low-interest loans to encourage new home building in the Fairbanks area. It was an immediate success. Today, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is still located at 530 4th Avenue in the same building where founder Julian Rice and First President Judge Vernon Forbes served on the first Board of Trustees. The bank has seen a lot of history, and their solid background of investment and involvement in the community has earned Mount McKinley their own place in Fairbanks history. Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank is proud to sponsor Meet a Pioneer. At Mount McKinley, they're looking forward to a future as proud as their past.
Dr. Roland Lombard, my guest on Meet a Pioneer. We have just 3 minutes left. It's really gone fast. What was your most cherished memory? Do you have a particular one or many?
Well, I think as far as Ray, was when I first got a race here, and then that's very hard to think of another one. I mean,
you had a special glow inside. It just meant a lot to you. Well, you've come back up here a lot of years. There must have been a lot of special things that happened. Made some special friends.
Yeah. There's nothing like being up here. I mean, I've raced down south, and it's great. But on the other hand, it's it doesn't seem like a winter.
Well, you've set the standard by which many mushers aspire to and set their goals. What do you see in the future of dog mushing?
Well, I think that it's going to keep going, and I think that the people that are in it are pretty good people, and they take good care of their dogs, and there's no fist fights or anything like that. I mean, it seems as though things are going very well.
Well, welcome to our city once again in 1985. It's a pleasure to have you here. The Grand Marshal? Honorary Race Marshal of our North American Classic starts today.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to seeing you next year, too, with your own dogs.
Oh, yes. I've got to do it.
To Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaskan Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
Good morning, Dr. Lombard.
Good morning.
Now, I'm going to present this to you. This is the certificate indicating you are a member of the KFAR Hall of Fame. The award is our highest honor. First in Fairbanks, the Pioneer Station KFAR presents this to you, the Golden Heart City. Hear ye, hear ye. This document dated March 14th, it was actually decided that you were to be inducted yesterday, will serve as proof that the recipient is a special person of the North. Alaskans are hearty people who are extremely proud of the great land. KFAR Radio recognizes Alaskans who contribute to our cherished lifestyle and our beloved 49th state. Dr. Roland Lombard, treat the named above named kindly. Hall of Fame members are special Alaskans. We salute people by their efforts who make Alaska a better place to live. Steve Agbaba, chairman of the Hall of Fame. Dr. Roland Lombard is an honorary member of our Hall of Fame. The Good Doctor is a mushing name from Massachusetts who has captured the hearts of Alaskans. We of the North Country are people who admire the animal dog. The dogs of Alaska are equal partners with Alaskans. Dogs have shared the road and pulled the load across some of the most rugged terrain known to man. As a result of our devotion to dogs, we respect and admire people such as Dr. Roland Lombard, who have dedicated their lives to the betterment of dogs. Dr. Lombard is a many times champion of sled dog races in Alaska. Alaskans respect the doctor for his achievements in competition. However, let this document be a testimonial that Alaskans look far beyond the winner's circle to measure a man. Dr. Lombard is known for his kindness, his warmth, his humility, the good doctor and his Alaskan treasure. We claim him as one of us, and we assure him that that the name Lombard will forever be enshrined in our hearts and mind. Alaska is the great land. Lombard is a great man. Steve Agbaba.
Oh, thank you. I didn't expect anything like that. Well, that's great.
We're pleased and proud to have you in the at KFAR Radio, and in just about 5 minutes after the news, we'll meet pioneer Dr. Roland Lombard. Stay tuned.
That night in Berkeley Square.
O'clock at KFAR Fairbanks.
From ABC News, I'm Kate Dorden. An historic trial could be getting underway soon because, as ABC's Irv Chapman reports, the Labor Secretary got a setback in a New York court today.
The case of Labor Secretary Donovan and his construction company moved a step closer to trial today.
Savings and loans associations in the state, 71 of them, need a break from depositor panic, so he's going to close them for 3 days. The so-called bank holiday applies just to the 71 savings institutions in the state, which are backed not by the government, but by a private insurance fund. Other institutions remain open. The reason for the fear of a run on these SNLs is that one of them went bust recently because of the failure of a Florida investment firm with which it had close financial ties. The government reports wholesale prices down 0.1% last month. The reason? Lower energy and food, especially meat prices. In fact, some food items, fresh fruits and vegetables, went way up because of the Florida freeze, but that was offset. And again, the economy turned in a performance that has inflation watchers...